Good evening, and welcome to the Monday, October 11th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you, and I forgot, I wanted to dedicate that to a couple of people that have passed from us, John Noble, and we had our hot dog store for a long time, and also Bob Dixon.
Here. Staffing under the supervision of Head Guard Andrew Mulholland and myself consisted of 5 returning lifeguards and 4 new hires. In May, we held our second annual United States Lifeguarding Association Open Water Lifeguard Academy, where we trained and certified 10 new lifeguards for Estero Bay's junior lifeguard and lifeguard programs. Returning lifeguards received 16 hours of training and were recertified in both CPR and first aid in-house by junior lifeguard coordinator Herb White and Karen Sweeney. New Tomorrow Bay was the donation of 2 fiberglass lifeguard towers. These lifeguard towers were surplus to us by state lifeguards in Ventura. After shipping and maintenance, these towers cost roughly $5,000 total, about $40,000 less than purchasing 2 new lifeguard towers. This year's lifeguard season started on May 28th and ran on weekends until June 12th, then daily until September 6th. After Labor Day, the towers were open only weekends until September 19th. The statistics for the 97 days worked were as follows. We had 2,436 public contacts, 1,091 preventative actions and public safety lectures, 19 medical aids, 24 surfer and swimmer assists, 9 rescues, 46 animal assists, 19 dog ordinance warnings, and 26 enforcement actions regarding cigarettes, alcohol, and fires on the beach, and 144 trash patrols. That is all. You have any questions?
You've been busy.
Yeah. Fairly busy year.
Good for you.
Foggy year.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Gail, for all you're doing. Okay, announcements. First of all, next weekend starts the second annual Morrow Photo Expo. It's happening at the Community Center on Friday through Sunday. George Lepp is our guest speaker. There are still some registrations available. So come on over at, I think it's 6 a.m. on Friday, or 7, something like that. Anyway, early on Friday morning, and you can still sign up. And we also, the Bird Festival registration is also open, and we have a family day for that this year. And registration goes fast with the Bird Festival. It's not till January, but a lot of things fill up quickly. So if you're interested in that, you can go to the website, morrowbaybirdfestival.org, birdfest.org. Other than that, the mayors met, and Betty had suggested that we give them a letter to the League of California Cities asking that we not be required to pay the full registration fee just to be able to vote when they have issues that they want the League participants to weigh in on, and that was received very well by the mayors, and we are going to do a letter from the group of us, and apparently it's not the first time it's been suggested, and our local representative, Dave Mullinax, is in support of that, too, so we will be moving ahead on that, so thank you for that suggestion. I think that's all for me. You got anything, Betty?
The Water Resources Advisory Committee for the county met this last week, and did some talk about a comprehensive invasive species strategic plan for the county. Mostly, I think it's in response to this bug that gets into, it's not a bug, it's a minuscule animal, into the water supplies and how to deal with that. And want you to know that our county has been very strict about enforcement of voting for those of you who vote on the lakes, and that we've had no incident this year where we think we've been infected. with our drinking waters. And for those who are following water projects in the county, Lake Nacimiento will get turned on in November. There'll be a quiet turn on. It's not going to make a big ceremony, but for those of you that know that that's been in the works for many years, it's going to come to fruition in November.
Thank you. Partners in Community Action will be at the Senior Center 2 weeks from today from 9 to 12 to check your blood pressure, check your blood work, things like this. It's all free. Don't forget about that. Had a chance to get on an airplane last weekend and was happy to see the SkyWest magazine. It flies all over the western United States. Had a nice article about Morro Bay and also quite a nice little ad about Morro Bay with the rock and all the things it has to offer. So it was good to see. The Thanksgiving dinner, the community Thanksgiving dinner, will be on Thanksgiving Day at the Community Center from 1 to 3. Some of the folks that are helping us put this on are Albertsons, Cookie Crock, Miner's Hardware, Ace Hardware, Mission Linen. Did I say hardware twice?
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Anyway, when you're at these places, you might want to tell the folks thank you, because without them it would be very difficult to put on. And we're looking for a really well-attended Thanksgiving dinner this year. We're going to get 42 turkeys from Albertsons and go from there. So that's what's on the docket.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to start by inviting people out to another event on the 23rd. We have actually two others happening. The first, though, is the second annual Jesse King Memorial Paddle Race, which is highlighting all sorts of ocean craft, human-powered ocean craft, and it's scheduled for this October 23rd. Last year, the race started at the Cayucas Pier and finished here at Coleman Beach in our estuary. And this year, because of timing and just to reduce the anxiety of all the different agents, our community groups working with our rec departments, and we're going to go through 3 p.m. that day and try to stay out of the way of the photo expo, of course. And the other couple of items I wanted to announce is this week, this Thursday, our JPA meeting for the wastewater treatment plant is going to be in Cayucas. It's going to be another comment opportunity for our draft EIR for the project. And it starts at, I believe it'll start at 6 o'clock now, but it may start at 4.
The meeting will start at 4, but the time to comment on the draft EIR will begin at 6.
Okay. And I did want to follow up, too, because we received, when we organized the tours of Santa Paula and also Pismo, we received some requests to tour our plants, and I was able to work out a date with Mr. Keough to tour our existing plants down at the Atascadero Road on the corner. And that date's going to be October 24th. From 1 till 3 p.m., and that's a Sunday. And Mr. Keough, our operator, is going to be hosting the tour. And if you'd like some more details about that, you can call me at 772-7668. And I just wanted to close by congratulating the Harbor Festival for what appeared to be a really fun event. I noticed a lot of different types of people out, from families to the Hard Rockers. And the music was really enjoyable, and the kids' area was just packed the whole both days. So good job to the organizers for the Harbor Festival.
And you did a good job overseeing the recycling. I just have a few things. The Harbor Advisory Board met last week, and I'm the liaison for the council. They did discuss the issue of loading zones that we had sent to them. They are looking for some more information from other staff or other department heads, and then we'll be bringing it back after some more discussion. Also, last week we had a speaker from the Morro Bay High School. It was homecoming last week. Morro Bay won. Yay to the high school kids. And Morro Bay 4-H Club, I'm going to put a plug in, is selling enchiladas. If anyone's interested in enchiladas to support the 4-H Club, Tammy Haas's number is 772-3358.
Madam Mayor, yes. I think it's worth acknowledging, and Mr. Smuckler reminded me, in honoring the Harbor Festival, that we had the downhill skateboarding contest on Morro Bay Boulevard this weekend,
right.
That was on national TV and had a crowd, yep. And was attended.
Lots of good stuff going on. Okay, our staff reports. Police. Chief Olivas.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. Thank you for this opportunity to share the activities over the weekend. At the police department, we had a very busy weekend. In addition to the events, which were well attended and actually went very smoothly, which we appreciate, we had 144 calls for service over the weekend, which resulted in about 21 case reports being taken, 5 arrests, and we had 5 periods in the city where there was only one officer available to respond. Some of the bigger cases, we actually had 2 vehicles reported stolen over the weekend. The first one, while we were investigating it, we found out CHP was investigating an accident in Los Osos with the same vehicle. Further investigation on that revealed that we ended up arresting the reporting party for a false report of a crime related to the stolen vehicle. The second one was actually related to a domestic violence case, and in investigating that, we did actually locate the vehicle in Morro Bay, and with a little bit of a weird twist on it, the suspect was found locked in the trunk of the vehicle. So he was released and then taken to jail for the domestic violence in the stolen vehicle. So on top of that, we actually had a subject, 2800 block of Ironwood, waved down our officers and had what appeared to be a live hand grenade and some ammunition and stuff that he was cleaning out a garage. So we obviously cordoned off the area, called out the bomb squad. They did an evaluation and turned out it was an inert gas grenade. But just a cautionary note that if you are cleaning out a garage or come across anything out in the dunes or anything that looks like it could be an explosive device, please leave it where it is. Notify us, and we'll take precautions into cordon off the area, and we will usually have the bomb squad respond to that. So I would just like to thank the officers publicly and our dispatchers for the hard work this weekend. It was pretty much nonstop all weekend. So I'll close on a note with our police volunteers, who we couldn't provide the services we do without their support, and they are just invaluable. I can't say enough good things about them. Over September, they donated 432 hours to the city, and for the Harbor Festival alone, just that weekend, they donated 268 hours of service. So my thank you to them. Thank you.
Yeah, I did hear sirens all weekend. Chief Pond, some of them were yours.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Good evening. Mine won't be nearly as entertaining as Chief Olivas. However, we've been quite busy as well. You know, we had 4 simultaneous calls last night, traffic accident on the highway, at the same time a small fire in a kitchen with a burn injury and a medical call. It's been like that for quite some time now. I think most of you know that we've had $750 Rotary donated, but the kids collected money. They knew the relay was coming. They've seen this before, so they collected money as well, and they had boots and containers and all kinds of things filled with change and cash. Filled a bucket full of, and I still don't know how much was in it. I don't know how long it took them to count it. But in the county, I think they raised over $11,000. They saw over 6,000 kids delivering the fire prevention message. So it was a good day and a good week. I think I'll end there. And one last thing. I want to remind everybody, since it is that time of year where we fall back or spring forward, fall back, we always change our smoke detectors. So be thinking, it's time to change the batteries in your smoke detectors. Thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you. And administration, Andrea.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I wanted to speak briefly this evening on the latest news that we received from PERC Water Company. As many of you know, I received an email from Brian Cullen, who's the president of PERC Water, on Thursday afternoon, October 7th. The email informed the city that based on 3 items, based on the existing contracts with Morro Bay and the Cayucos Sanitary District, the lack of cooperation from city staff, and the current draft EIR not contemplating the PERC water solution, that the attorneys for PERC had directed PERC staff to no longer continue efforts on the wastewater project in Morro Bay. The email further stated that PERC would not be presenting their CDR, which stands for Customized Design Report, at the October 14th JPA meeting. I felt, in response to the allegation that staff has been uncooperative, that it's imperative that we provide some further detail on that issue. Following the commitment from PERC to provide the Customized Design Report, and with the direction from you, the City Council, and the Cayucos Sanitary District to work with PERC, staff has spent many, many, many hours in meetings as well as gathering documentation for PERC to successfully and timely complete their customized design report. In my review of the last couple of months working with PERC, I absolutely do not agree that staff there's been any uncooperative behavior. In fact, quite the contrary. There is a number of correspondence between city staff and PERC staff regarding requests for information, which were all provided, and at no time did PERC staff contact the city, any city staff member, about documents or information that was not provided. In looking at the past and trying to determine what could be deemed as uncooperative behavior, I came up with two issues that I want to just briefly review. Perhaps Mr. Cullen, who is the president of PERC Water, is viewing my insistence for confirmation that PERC would provide actual cost figures when they provided their customized design report at the October 14th JPA meeting as uncooperative behavior. This insistence came only after we had a meeting in September 23rd, between city staff and PERC staff, where it was staff's expectation to have a complete customized design report, which included cost figures. However, at the conclusion of that three-hour meeting in September, no costs were provided. The second possibility that it could perhaps be termed as uncooperative would be when city staff at that September 23rd meeting refused to sign a confidentiality agreement in order to be allowed to keep a copy of the incomplete customized design report. Again, and in closing, I feel it's extremely important to set the record straight that your city staff followed through with the direction you and the Cayuga Sanitary Board gave in a professional, timely, and cooperative manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
No? Yeah, actually, it's not related to that topic. I'm just interested. Last city council meeting at our future agenda items, we had some discussion about the Chamber of Commerce CEO position, and asked you to follow up with that for us, and just wanted to know if there was an update that you had that would give the public a little more detail about what the process is going to be.
Absolutely. I met with the president of the chamber, Stuart McElhaney, to talk a little bit about the procedure, and it looks like from the latest information that there will be a couple of teams that are listening to the interviews, and I will sit on one of those teams. There will be a second team as well, and then those two teams will give a recommendation to, my understanding was, the full chamber board, who will make the final decision. I think the council was interested in having a hotelier or a retailer, somebody that's involved with the tourism, on one of those teams, as well as the final deciding group, and I think that has been met. So that's the latest that I have. I haven't confirmed that. I met with Mr. McElhaney last Monday or Tuesday, but it looks like it's going in the direction that the council was interested in. Is that helpful? Okay.
Okay, and closed session report, Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to a regular session, council met in closed session to discuss real property transactions. The property they discussed was the Embarcadero Grill and the Outrigger. As to both of those items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. As to the
check from the Bank of America, and see where it says Washington? It states, I won that amount. Please cash this check. However, in order to collect it, please send us $2,800. Now, I received this a couple weeks ago, and because I talked to Chief Olivos, too, we used to do, and I don't mean to beat this to death, but working with the interagencies, our police officers and so forth, we used to go out and brief individuals. Am I too close? We used to brief individuals, and I have PowerPoint presentations. I'm also going to stand something up for the senior center. We used to go out and brief individuals on fraud. So if you can tell by this, what I did was, because I'm the eternal skeptic when it comes to things like this, I tracked it, and I even went as far as into MapQuest and pulled up the building number, you know, where it shows the actual picture of the street. It's really a nice post office box. And also the 1647 number is Ontario, Canada. And I tracked it from here, and of course you notice that the check said Washington. Then I tracked it into New York. Then I tracked it into Ontario, Canada. And then I picked up the phone and called a friend of mine, and it's from the Far East. Big surprise. The bad thing is that if they'll send it to me, they'll send it to anyone, and I'm sure more of these went out. This isn't anything new. And my biggest worry, and you know, people see a check like this, and they run to the bank. Also states, name brand stores like Staples, Walmart, and so forth. And I just want everybody to be aware of this because, you know, we all work too hard for our money to just give it up. Had I went and cashed that, I'd be out over $6,000. I also, oh, can I just finish up with one thing? I also notified the Postmaster General and the United States Attorney General.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council, everyone. Good evening. My name's Don Doubledee. Luckily, I've been able to be the interim CEO of the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center for the last couple of months. I'm having a great time with it. And we had a Chamber of Commerce Day, so I thought this is a good day to come down and give you a little update on what's been going on. First, the 4th Annual Avocado Margarita Festival that we had on the 18th was very successful. We raised a great deal of money for the Morro Bay High School cheerleaders. And congratulations to Stephen Music for his guacamole recipe and Gary Barker of Design Street Catering for his avocado ceviche, which was delicious. The following weekend, or two weekends later, was the Savor event and the Harbor Festival. Both were extremely successful events, helping to promote our city. Thank you to the TBID, the Promotions Committee, the Harbor Festival Committee, and all the many volunteers. The Visitor Center continues to be very busy. We've had some staff changes, but we're covering the center with staff and volunteers. We have a brand new brochure. I put a copy of it on each of your desks there that was created by TBID. It's a beautiful publication. We are very grateful to have that. We're using it for the fulfillments. Fulfillments are mailings that we send out of information requested through advertising, internet, telephone, and drop-in visitors. The downtown farmers market continues to be one of the most successful in the county. We have had some controversy. Surprise, it's Morro Bay. The current layout has people walking down the middle of the street and the vendors on each side, which kind of creates a block to the businesses. So we're looking for ways to improve that. The Chamber Board appointed a subcommittee, recently nicknamed the Squirrel Committee, to work on some solutions to these issues. But we've all been busy with the Avocado Margarita Festival and the Harbor Festival, and we haven't quite got things worked out. But it is creating an opportunity for everybody to voice their opinions. And by the time we get done coming up with a solution, I think everybody's going to be well represented, and it's a good process we've gone through. We hope to come forward with a plan in the next week or two that will resolve the issues and turn out to be even better for our farmers market. Madam Mayor, you mentioned the Photo Expo coming up.
Hello, Gary Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I got two things for the Historical Society. We're really stoked about having Botso Carcelli. As we all know, those people that don't, he's going to be our guest speaker on November 7th, and it's going to be from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And he's the one that he was a community artist in our community. He's responsible for the giant chessboard, the Continental. Staircase. I'm sorry, and sculptures of the Centennial Library and the roundabout, that rock statue out by the roundabout, and he also designed that one that car hit that one by. It didn't move anything. The car got the worst part of it. So we're really, really excited about it. We're going to have it here at the Vets Hall. And you'll be hearing more and more about it. We'll be more and more of the advertising. If you have any questions, call Jenny Bratley at 234 7279 or call me, Gary Johnson, at 772-3738. And also, most importantly, too, as I said at the Harbor Festival, we announced our Then and Now book, and that'll be for sale at here. We're also going to have a book signing at the Coalescent Bookstore October 17th, Sunday, from 1 to, I think it's 1 to 3 at the Coalescent Bookstore. And so all the Roger Castle, Gary Ream, and myself, who are the authors of the book, we're really excited about it. We got some fantastic responses from people about the book, and it's an important historical book, not just for us, but for the city of Morro Bay. And that's also the profits go to the Historical Society. And don't forget, too, our mayor had made the announcement about our expo. And I have some cards here I'll leave at the back. And I have some flyers for the other event on a chair in the back there. You can pick it up on your way out. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay. It's a wonderful book. I've got it. It's really interesting.
Thank you. Yeah. Everybody should have one in their house.
Absolutely.
I met somebody the other day that's not even a resident here, and she just bought one.
Okay.
He's tall. Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff. As a longtime member of our Citizens Bicycle Committee, I want to be the one to thank you ever so much for starting work on the bike lanes on North Main Street. We started this project years and years ago. I know it was defeated once, it came back, and now we actually see curb and sidewalk happening. We see the city getting ready to do the striping. This will be a much safer route for people who live and work on that part of North Morro Bay. So again, as a member of the Bicycle Committee, I thank you for that. And since I have some time, I might as well tell you I am a candidate for City Council, your most experienced candidate, of course. And I have one more event coming up. That's Friday, October 22nd, at Top Dog Coffee Bar. We're going to meet in the garden out and back. I'll buy a big pot of coffee or two if I need to. We invite everyone to bring their lunch, and we'll be talking specifically about issues regarding and affecting the downtown area. Everything from what you think about the farmers market to the revitalization project that we saw presented from Cal Poly. So, once again, please join us Friday, October 22nd at noon until we run out of coffee and conversation to talk about uptown issues. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Linda Winters. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm here tonight as a repeat performance from 2 weeks ago to make an announcement about a very important initiative that is on the November ballot, the California State Park and Wildlife Conservation Trust Fund Act of 2010, aka Proposition 21. We reviewed briefly, we will review points as far as this proposition is concerned. It's a grassroots campaign. It's a nonpartisan issue. The particulars on it is separates the California State Parks from the general fund, and the way that that will happen will be an $18 fee attached to all 28 million non-commercial vehicle registration fees, half acres. And that divides into everyone owns 0.04% of an acre, and there's 43,560 square feet in every acre. So that means each and every one of us own approximately 1,089 square feet of California property. And I'm going to put my dibs on Morro Bay State Park, State Beach, right down here. That's where I'd like my 1,000 square feet. So this is a very important issue for all of us so that we can all have a part in saving these state park lands. Most importantly, we all get out and vote, and hopefully we'll all see the benefits of Proposition 21. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Bill Yates. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. Good evening, staff. I'm another one up here for thanks. As you all know, I'm on the Harbor Festival Board of Directors, and I wanted to thank, first and foremost, all the volunteers. There was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volunteers from about 100 different nonprofit agencies that will all receive money back for every hour they work down there, and we're very, very grateful to them. We're very grateful to all the city departments. I was almost tempted to highlight one, and I'm going to resist because everybody did such a great job down there. And we took all the comments we got. We know it wasn't perfect. I mean, we pulled it off great. We could have done some things better. We did an autopsy on it the following day. I know the board's going to be working to improve it even more next year. So I just want to thank the community and thank you guys and thank staff and thank all the volunteers and everybody involved in it for making it the success it was. And I would also like to lend my voice in to get out and vote. I know so many of you have told me already that you've already voted, and that's great. But if you have your absentee ballot and you don't get it off, you've got till election day. You can hand walk it into your polling place. You don't even have to register, sign anything. Just hand it over. If you're a polling place voter, please come out and vote. And I know you're going to be hearing this message a lot. And I think everybody encourages everybody to get out and vote on November 2nd. Thanks for your time. Bye.
Thank you. Okay, that it? We'll bring it back to the council. And we have some time, so let's go for our consent agenda. Unless, I'm sorry, was there any comments on comments, anyone? Okay. Consent agenda, anyone want to pull anything? I want to pull A8.
I'd like to pull 4 and 5.
Anyone else? Okay, can I hear a motion approving A 1, 2, 3, 6, and 7, please?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Betty, A 4.
A 4 is the lease agreement between the city and Abba Amani for his lease site, which is known as the SALT building on the Embarcadero. There are a couple of items that I'd like to note for change, and I believe they're right here. Thank you for just giving me a minute to find them. Had talked to the city attorney about some that I wanted to make, and he suggested not, so I'll overlook those. There were two that I thought were significant. One was the item regarding the change in language wherever we see the term harbor director or his designee, to just add that phrase, was one. And the second one, excuse me?
To limit the office space to the second floor.
Yes, thank you very much. And would you happen to know, Mr. Schultz, what section that's in?
3.01.
Thank you, Ms. Lichtenbaum.
Just because I have it right here.
But that follows in policy that the council has passed before, that when we look at office space, that it be on the second floor, on the Embarcadero, because we did start to allow that to happen, but we wanted it restricted, and wanted to add that to this document.
Okay. Anything else on that one, anyone?
I would just add, to echo some of your questions, Ms. Von Holtz, that I did agree that I felt the base rent was extremely low.
I thought so, too. Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry I didn't bring that up at closed session for a further comment, nothing to do now. So, sorry about that.
No, I just welcome that there'll be a percentage added. And
yeah, thank you.
All right, so you want to make a motion with those corrections?
Surely. I would move approvals as opposed to more. And the second question, I believe, had to do with the boundaries of the traditional ground was?
It's a limited entry fishery to start with, so new people can't get into it. Mm-hmm. I think currently there's maybe 35, maybe 40 tops in the entire state. Mm-hmm. And in that particular area, about maybe 8 active vessels that fish that area. We have about 5 to 6 vessels between Port St. Louis and here that have the permit that can fish up there and do fish up there occasionally. And in terms of the boundaries, what happened when they did the original lines of it was they said it would be within the state waters, and the traditional fishing grounds for halibut in Monterey are outside 3 miles, so the fishermen assumed that they could continue fishing in that area as it's sandy bottom, which is the same area in Santa Barbara that they are currently allowing halibut to be trawled for. Technically, however, the state boundary line goes out quite a bit further in Monterey. It goes across the bay. And it wasn't until the late 1990s that Fish and Game put out a notice that they would be strictly enforcing that regulation about the halibut fishery. So now they're going back to try to get that area to be put back in to be allowed.
Thank you for explaining that, particularly the first one. If there's no questions, I'll move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. All right, and then I pulled 8H. This is a resolution of the City of Morro Bay in support of Proposition 22, the Local Taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Protection Act. And I want to just read some of this because I think it's so important to all of us. Whereas, despite the fact that voters have repeatedly passed measures to prevent the state from taking away dedicated local revenues, the state legislature has continued to seize and borrow billions of dollars in local government and transportation funds in the past few years. Think dial-a-ride. These continual raids of local government funds have led to severe consequences, such as layoffs, delays in road safety improvements, public transit fare increases, and cutbacks in public transit services. Approval of this ballot initiative would close the loopholes and change the Constitution to prevent state politicians in Sacramento from seizing, diverting, shifting, borrowing, transferring, suspending, or otherwise taking or interfering,
stealing,
tax revenues dedicated to funding local government. I'm sorry, I'm choking. Could you read that last part, please?
Yeah. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that the City of Morro Bay formally endorses Proposition 22, the Local Taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Protection Act of 2010, a proposed constitutional amendment.
Thank you. All 7 mayors have supported this, and I'm hoping that our entire council will support this. It's very important. So with that, I move approval of the resolution.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Thank you. And while I have a coughing fit, we'll take a short break, and then we'll come back for our public hearings.
Supposed to.
Okay, we're back. And our first item on the agenda is item B1. And we'll have a report from Joe Woods. But again, I would remind people, if you do want to speak on this issue, I can have you line up over there. It just makes it easier. That way we're not, oh, I'll get up first. No, I'll get up. You first go. You know, it avoids all that. So if you did want to speak, I'd appreciate it if you'd sit in the chairs over there and be ready for that. Okay? Staff report, Joe?
Good evening, Madam Mayor and City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to review the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park. We're currently working underneath the parameters of the MOU, which I've included in your staff report, which is between the Morro Bay City of Morro Bay and the Morro Bay Pups. It's for the construction, the maintenance, and the operation of the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park, which was approved in June the 8th of 2009. The Morro Bay Pups were able to obtain funding to fulfill their construction obligations and begin the construction, which happened in 2009. The dog park had the Morro Bay Pups had raised sufficient funds to start in on the dog park, and have made significant substantial completions by 2010. They had a soft opening, and the dog park and the Morro Bay Pups actually officially opened with a grand opening in June the 12th, 2010. Pursuant to the Planning Commission's recommendations, the dog park was to be reviewed every 2 years. And report made available to your city council. After the public comment received in May, council directed staff to review the status of the dog park and bring it to the Recreation Parks Commission for review and then back to council. At our regular meeting of the joint of the Recreation and Parks Commission, September the 28th, the Morro Bay Pups assist the department with the enforcement of the rules and the dissemination of information to the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park and all their attendees. Staff feels that the Morro Bay Pups have put significant effort into both of these requirements. The Morro Bay Pups have developed an educational program that includes member docents as well as information for attendees through signs and posters and also emails and phone calls. The Morro Bay Pups have also attempted to partner with the high school for recruitment of students to volunteer at the dog park and for required community service hours. And they may have a report and public comment on their efforts and the status of that, but right now it's pending. Although the family, the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park has been successful today, to this day, there is some opposition to the park. And neighbors living on Island Street have come forward. They've signed a comment letter that you've received a few months back. They've identified the noise from the dog park as a public nuisance to them. Basically, the noises that they're identified are dogs barking, dogs fighting, and handlers yelling at their dogs. Residents claim that though these noises have existed in the past through the temporary use, they become increasingly more noticeable. And staff has met with a couple of residents that have come forth. We've talked about the conditions at the park and on Island Street, and I've suggested that they go through the public hearing process. They have attended public comment on various meetings, not only City Council, but also for the RPC, and they came in our last meeting as well. During the public comment, several members of the public spoke regarding the dog park. The list of speakers all consider the dog park to be a real asset to the community. At least half brought up the concern of noise. The sounds of dogs and the handlers seem to be the most common thread from the people who spoke. Apparently, these sounds and noises from the dogs and their handlers are either generated at the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park or the park proper or even Island Street. Residents have dogs in their backyard. So the number of sources that the sounds and noises come from. The Recreation Parks Commission discussed the comments of the public and noted and agreed that the noise from the dogs in the park proper and the noises from all the dogs and the loose dogs in the Del Mar park proper were the major concerns. The Recreation Parks Commission is not recommending any amendments to the current MOU between the city and the Morro Bay Pups. But however, they would like you to consider some actions for this evening to possibly offset or address some of the major concerns. And there's six, and I'll go through them fairly quickly. Number one, modify the hours of the operation of the family dog park and monitor at certain times. Number two, increase the enforcement of the current city regulations for dogs off the leash. And these efforts could be done through what staff has discussed, administrative citations or police volunteers or even more staff visibility in that area. Number three, modify the north fence line to address sound that could be transferred to Island Street. Some of the ideas there were to raise the fence height and maybe affix some soundproofing to it that was still up in the air. Number four, add vegetation between the dog park and the creek for a sound barrier. Number five, staff to moderate a meeting between the Morro Bay Pups and the Island Street residents. And number six, improve the site signage for the dog park, particularly at the dog park and also the parking lots. Staff does concur that the major problems to date seem to be the noise of the dogs, and also the loose dogs in the park. I would take this time to apologize to council for staff's inaccuracy in the staff report. The dog park hours are not as stated. They actually are 8 a.m. until dusk, Monday through Friday, and 9 a.m. until dusk on Saturdays and Sundays. And that was part of the direction we received from council when this project was finalized back in June, just a later start on the weekends. Staff feels that any restriction of the hours for the dog park would not necessarily curtail the number of handlers and dogs attending or visiting Delmar Park. It would limit the number of hours and time that you would have to be on off-leash in the dog area, but not limit your hours to the park. Staff feels that the remaining recommendations should be considered with an emphasis on enforcement and improved signage. In conclusion, entities operating off-leash dog parks have issues of concern from time to time, and the reality
that are trained right now to issue parking citations. They don't typically and have not been previously allowed to write administrative citations. We do have city staff that has received training both at Rec and Parks as well as public services that does have the authority and the site books to go ahead and issue administrative cites. But at this time, we currently don't have volunteers that do that other than for parking issues.
Is that something that they could be trained to do? I mean, what I'm looking at is it seems to me that enforcement is a big issue. I know you don't have the staff to do that, but I think if it was done even by volunteers a couple of times, we're going to get the message across real quick when they get a couple of citations. Is that something they could be trained to do down the line?
I wouldn't be opposed to it with the caveat of our volunteers are pretty taxed right now. We've added, if you heard the hours
right.
that they've already, you know, provided in September and October, to put another task on them as their responsibility, I would be a little uncomfortable with that, and it would be something I would want to take to them as a group and get their thoughts okay. and opinions first.
Fair enough. Okay, thank you. All right, this is a public hearing.
I have a question.
Oh, yes, Carla.
I'm sorry, Chief Olivos. Isn't standard procedure for dogs barking, though, even in residence, isn't the first or second time warnings prior to a citation? So wouldn't it be considered that they'd be issued a warning in advance or something?
Yes. Thank you, Council Member Borchard. What we typically do, the administrative site process, if you remember when it was passed through Council, it was required that a warning be given before a citation be issued. And we do have warning booklets that we do issue that so we could track it so it can be followed up with a citation as long as they first received a warning.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a public hearing, so if you wish to speak on this issue, please come forward.
Hello, I'm Stephen Margatello of Jamaica Street, Moore Bay. That's one block north of Island Street. I'd like to make a few comments about dog park noise myself. I was at the dog park this afternoon till 5:30. I was there with about four large dogs in the large dog park, running, chasing each other, playing, rolling on the ground, having a great time. Not so much as one bark. Their feet hitting the ground was all you could hear. There was one small dog in the small dog park, and since he had no one to bark at, he was also quiet. Basically, that is a common occurrence that is not necessarily an isolated instance. It's usually fairly quiet there. However, there are some other sources of dog noise, as has already been mentioned. There were several dogs barking at the time I was there in the parking lot, the Ironwood parking lot, and also in between the school grounds and the park itself on the far side of the basketball court. In addition, several weekends now in a row, I have been by the Meadow Park picnic area, which is immediately adjacent to the restrooms, and they've had large parties there, having children's parties, for instance, or family gatherings, with dogs tied to a tree some distance away, and these dogs were barking constantly. I have the strangest feeling that somehow this is being logged as dog park noise by the Island Street neighbors. In addition, there are some dogs in the backyards of the 300 and 400 block of Island Street that are pretty noisy, especially when the kids get into the park, into the creek area between the dog park and the northern park boundary. There's a pretty heavy willow thicket forest, and the kids get in there and do whatever kids do when they're hidden away from public view, and the dogs start barking at them, making tremendous amounts of noise and basically constantly barking. In addition, about 100 and maybe 50 feet from one of the principal Island Street neighbors who's been identified as the complainers, I guess I could call them, my neighbor four doors down from me has two dogs which bark almost constantly, and the echoing of their voices might be interpreted as actually coming from the park. It's hard to tell where they're coming from when you're in the midst of several two-story houses. So basically, I would ask you to consider that there are other sources of noise than the dog park itself, and a lot of these we don't have any control over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Nada Simpson. I'm a 23-year resident of Los Osos, and I'm a member of the Morro Bay Pups Board. After Morro Bay Pups secured the approval of the City Council to build the dog park, we were faced with the awesome challenge of obtaining the funds to build it. It was a proposed park and took our guests on a tour of the grounds. This event was covered by the press and definitely put us on the map as to being seriously committed to this endeavor. We then distributed hundreds of professionally prepared brochures to dog groomers, veterinarians, pet stores, and many, many others. And then we hoped this would work. The outcome of this was that in an amazingly short time, we had collected well over an additional $50,000. And we were on our way to realizing our dream. The point to this is the joint effort of a large community of dedicated citizens. Many, many, many people contributed to the building of this park. It is not a small group of friends anymore. It is much larger than that. It is a public-supported, beautiful amenity to the city, and one that we of Morro Bay Pups are proud to be part of.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is George Bomley. I live in North Morro Bay. I was not one of the Morro Bay Pups board members or founders, but I did begin my association by helping with the fundraising efforts. Therefore, my views are not so much as one of the architects, but as an observer of their efforts and now a beneficiary of what they have accomplished. I'd like to highlight just a few of the topics that might help us all remember what they've done for us, not just for the dog park, but actually trying to be good citizens for the community as a whole. Morro Bay Pups has been providing both the funds and the labor to provide mutt mitt dispensers inside and outside the dog park. They've been doing this long before the dog park was around. They've done it at the entrances to the both entrances to the gates as well as inside the dog park. This alone represents more than $2,000 a year just for those bags, plus the volunteer help to change them out on how many times a week? Several times a week. The designated dog park provides an area devoted to the socialization and health of our community dogs. It provides the additional advantage of allowing small, aging, and timid dogs the comfort and the confidence of being able to mix with dogs of their own size or energy level instead of being intimidated or even injured by playful or more aggressive larger dogs. It is truly heartwarming when you're out there and you see 10 or 15 dogs milling around, having fun with each other, as we like to, and getting much-needed exercise at the same time. The Jody Giannini Family Dog Park was built to comply with ADA rules and regulations for our community at significant cost and delays of building. The dog park was built with the help of a large portion of our community membership, you've heard this before, and commercial establishments showing their support with donations and physical assistance. The Morro Bay membership now includes over 170 households, with over 120 of them reachable by email, which we use on a regular basis, mailing out news items, educational tips, requests for volunteer assistance. As a personal observation, I can say that almost every single day I'm there, and included today, comments are being exchanged about how much people appreciate the dog park, how it's been done in such a quality manner, how happy they are to have such a facility for themselves and their dogs.
I don't know if it's possible to implement anything that appeals to a equally to a community of 10,000 people, but this park seems to come about as close to that as anything I've seen, and it's been at no incremental expense to the community members or added tax base or putting additional burdens on our city budget. In summary, I have seen some very dedicated people do some monumental things to make this a reality. I think the Rex and Parks people, the city council members who supported this, should stand proudly next to these people and appreciate the time that's taken them, share their credit for this awesome addition to our community. I think
Thank
the dog
you.
Park and the people who made it a reality should be thanked and commended, not criticized.
Thank you.
Those.
Your time's up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Peters, council members, good evening. I'm Elaine Giannini, a board member of the Morro Bay Pups. Morro Bay Pups is extremely proud of the Jody Giannini Family Dog Park. We feel it is a beautiful asset to the city of Morro Bay. We have formed a strong alliance with the City of Morro Bay, the Council, the Planning Commission, the Parks and Rec Commission, and staff during the creation of our park. We are partners in this venture. Morro Bay Pups is committed to maintaining our park to the highest standards. Therefore, at the onset of the first complaint of this sign has been prominently displayed at the entrance to the park, again asking owners to be aware of their dog's activities. And here also is the main gate with the city's rules and regulations and that sign right next to it. And this is the main gate into the entrance of the park, so it's very prominently displayed. A program is being initiated at Morro Bay High School for students to become docents also at our park. They would receive community service hours for doing so. Our certified dog trainer and board member, Donna Klein, is working with the high school to implement this program. At least 6 emails have gone out to our general membership over the past several months, reminding them of the obligation to our park and the neighboring homes. It is our goal to eliminate any issues arising from our park by being proactive, which we strongly feel we have done and will continue to do. One possible helping hand, as we have mentioned before, would be to have enforcement of the leash law outside the park. I was there just a day or two ago with my dogs on leash, and as we all know, when a dog is on leash, there's a different atmosphere than when the dogs are off leash, and I had 3 dogs come at my dogs on leash. And luckily, they were harmless, but I did remind the owner that there is a city leash law, and she said, I used to do that, but I saw so many other people doing it that I just let mine go now. So that would be very helpful to us. And maybe just for a short period of time from the 4 to 6:30 p.m. Heavy use period of time for a short period. And it was mentioned earlier, if we get a few warnings and a few citations, I think that issue will be resolved. And I believe that part of the noise issue will be resolved also. I want to thank you for your time and
thank you. We gave you a little extra for the technical. Thanks, Jamie.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Steve Eckes. I'm a board member of Morro Bay Pups. This is a gem that is difficult to appreciate. I just came back from 11 weeks on the road in an RV, and one of the first things I did was go over to the park, take my dog over there, and I just marveled. There's nothing like it out there. I was in the 5 southwestern states of this country, and we have something that others just simply don't have. And that is the product of a working partnership between you and your staff and us. And I suggest to you that we all have different responsibilities, and we are each equipped differently to deal with different problems. The dog park is among your brightest legacies, and it is truly your legacy. This is one that happened on your watch. You deserve that credit. The public benefit of it is huge, and it's simply a first-class amenity that has come to this community without a penny's capital expenditure from the city of Morro Bay. But a truth attends this, and that is that dogs bark. They just do. They bark at home. They bark on the streets. They bark in the park. They bark in the dog park. It's going to happen. And the issue is, who is best equipped to deal with that? Is it the city council? Does the city council want to deal with this on a regular basis, perhaps? Is it the staff? Does the staff have the folks to do it? Does the department have the folks to do it? I suggest to you that we are the only ones who can do this, because shorter hours, higher fences, more trees is not going to solve this problem. What's going to solve this problem is people talking to dog owners about controlling their dogs. That's what we do. That's what these yellow badges are. That's what Steve Marcatello, who was up here a few moments as your first speaker on this subject, that's what he does virtually every day. No one, I don't think you've got anybody who can do it. And what I'm suggesting to you is that our partnership that you and we have together is based on a fundamental principle that I ask you to reaffirm tonight. And that is that the council will not be drawn into dog park complaints as long as the Morro Bay pups are acting in good faith and making their best efforts to deal with these problems. As Mr. Wood said, the MOU says the pups have the primary duty and responsibility to operate this park. You hold us accountable, but the measure should be, are we acting
in it that addresses the noise coming from the dog park? We would like that changed. Volunteers from the pups group have been working to make the park successful, and we appreciate everything they have done to alleviate the noise problems. But my question is this: what happens when these kind people get volunteer fatigue, or they move, the dog dies, life changes, and they can't volunteer anymore? The well-meaning, self-regulating docent program falls to the wayside. Will we have to come back here yet again to ask for equal representation? We protested this dog park location time after time, and were told noise wouldn't be a problem, dogs don't bark when they're having fun, it won't be as bad as you think, and we'll make it good if it's a problem. So, we are back here again saying we are still hearing the dogs barking, dogs fighting, people yelling. The closest house is 150 feet away. Our house is 200 feet away. There are 16 other houses within 300 feet. The homeowners on Island Street deserve to be represented in this agreement. Everyone agrees that a barking dog is annoying. The sound of dog fights is beyond annoying. It's upsetting. If I have a neighbor with a barking dog, I have a chance to talk to that neighbor. If that fails, animal control. Neither of those avenues are available to the Island Street residents faced with nuisance barking and fighting from the dog park. We need some rules in place. Having a docent there is nice, and it would really be nicer to have it as a requirement in the MOU. And also, Joe, I think you mentioned trees on the north side. You know, if you go for that, I think we need them on the west side too. So, will you please change the MOU to include the interests of the homeowners on Island Street, assuring the quiet enjoyment of our homes, not to mention our property values, so they're not affected by the dog park? We're at your mercy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, council members. My name is Mike Anderson, also from Island Street. And it gives me no great pleasure to come here and step on toes and paws. That's not what I want to do. I appreciate the work they've done. It is a super park. It's just darn unfortunate. It's so close to so many houses. With that in mind, I just want to ask you to direct the park and staff to implement some of the changes and improvements in their most recent staff report. The 6 recommendations from the Rec and Park Commission are realistic and common sense solutions. Along with my neighbors, I feel these changes need to be made to help alleviate the noise issues from the dog park. As homeowners immediately adjacent to the park, I don't think it's unreasonable for us to ask for some peace and quiet. Again, please consider directing staff to implement some of these changes. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Comments? Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Ready?
Okay. I took the liberty of contacting Dr. David DeBink. He has a noise consulting business in San Luis. He used to teach at Cal Poly. And he had actually been over to the park over on the weekend. And I just said, you know, this is coming to a head. Do you have suggestions? You know, this is your expertise. Experience there was much like has been reported, that he walked through the park. There was a dog tied to a tree that was barking outside the park. He walked around the fence of the park. Nobody was barking. He walked over to the little dog park. One dog yelped at him once, and then that was it. His suggestion was that you need to do some kind of a time log, that we need to do some kind of a time log that records events, the extent of the noise, and the location of the noise. He suggested that we get a person who knows how to do with recording equipment, including a noise meter, to sample the sounds around there. I did not. I just said, you know, what are some? Are there possibilities that could help with this situation?
First of all, the dog park itself is a wonderful park, and it's well kept, and it's a very nice looking place. On the way here tonight, I stopped and got coffee, and this was in the little place where all the handouts are. Dog Friendly Morro Bay shows a list of all the businesses. Here's our new chamber guide, Pet Friendly Morro Bay. So, you know, I live a couple of houses from the entrance to the park, and I can always see. I can always tell who's going to be a responsible person and who's not just by looking at them. And maybe 80%, 85% are on leash and not making any problems and going down to enjoy the park and be responsible. And then I see people riding their bikes with dogs running behind them, or I've even seen cars where the dogs are running by the car and the people think that's great exercise. I don't know. But, you know, and I happen to own, I love my dogs. I love my dogs, but I have like the worst offender in the world. She drives me nuts. And thank God I have no neighbors on either side of me, because I wouldn't want to have to listen to my dog or somebody else's dog all the time. And I try to keep it quiet, but with everybody walking right by my house, it's a little tough. So I'm also being affected by it. But, you know, that's part of the price I pay for living where I do. So let's get back to the point here. I think what I'd like to see, saying it's the park is open till dusk, it's kind of nebulous to me. Seasons change, times change. Some people's version of dusk isn't others' people. I'd like to see an opening and a closing time. I'd also like to see when the park is not open that the park is locked. That way, if there are things happening in the area, they can say, well, it wasn't from the park wasn't even open. And usually it is, you know, I mean, I see unleashed dogs all the time. And what I would like to see, since you can't just tell people it's the right thing to do and anymore, is you give them a warning, and if they don't adhere to it, you slap them with a fine big enough to get their attention. And I was talking to the chief about this earlier, and you were going to check on something regarding that. And I'll let you speak to it real briefly, and then I'll get back to what I'm saying.
Yeah, I have, at your request, thank you, Councilmember Grantham. First offense is $96. Second offense in within a year period is $102. Third offense within that same year period is $232 are the fines.
Well, I'd even like to see it more than that, just to ensure compliance. And another thing, I think, is budgets shrink. I was reading a story in the USA Today today about bigger cities than ours, but they're utilizing civilians for a lot of things that enforcement traditionally does. They're even investigating burglaries and all these other kinds of things. So I would like to see you go forward with that and see what we can do to get some enforcement, see if there's any volunteers that are looking to expand their roles or responsibilities. I'm not against adding any more trees if that's going to help the situation, but I think the biggest thing is, you know, like I say, you can't legislate responsibility and people doing the right thing, so your recourse is you make them pay for it when they don't. So I'd like to take a look at our schedule for noncompliance and put some teeth into it. And I'll let my fellow council members take it up from here.
Thank you. I also visited the park today for the first time in a couple of months, and just walking around and reflecting on the product of the park, very impressed at what has been developed there, and I think it's very clear what an asset it is for our community, especially acknowledging the number of dog owners and just the number of people that visit our community with pets. It's essential that we have these sort of opportunities for people, and understanding the process of development of the park, there were a number of alternative sites that were evaluated with authenticity and genuinely looked at by the pups and the community process, and it's pretty clear that this was the one spot that really shone out as fitting most of the needs that we have. Unfortunately, it has been challenging for the Island Street neighbors, and I hear their concerns, but I also hear, as others have mentioned, dogs barking throughout our neighborhoods, and it's a challenging situation to try to rectify that completely, which I think is important because the pups, as has been said in their comments, have done a really admirable job of trying to go there. I think with the performance that I've seen, I'm comfortable working with the community policing plus some support with enforcement for the short term, and definitely with the signage. I felt like the sign that you have at the front door was an excellent sign, reminding people of the context of the location. I would like to see that be permanent, the signage there, especially right. You can't miss it as you open the door to enter the park, the dog park, and perhaps having a few more permanent signs within the two different run areas so that people, you know, as they're inside the park, they look over and they see, you know, nothing that's like sign pollution, but it's very clear and to the point about the neighborhood and noise being a sensitive issue for the park. So signage to me was very important. I've heard a concept about better signage in the parking lot on the north and the south of the park, and I think that would be interesting as well, kind of welcoming people to the park and generally requesting to respect the neighborhood and the park resources. I think would be a helpful addition, and it sounds like Mr. Woods has some ideas there. Very thankful that the pups have been working on the docent monitoring program. Your name tags are a great step. The concept with the high school and some community service is excellent, and makes me feel like you're still evolving with your work to address this challenge, and that's very reassuring to me. More trees, hey, I'm not going to say no to that. I talked to Mr. Woods earlier, and he thought that might be something that would help buffer a little bit more, especially as the creek goes dormant with the willows over there, just to make sure that there's not only perhaps some more greenery to screen the noise, but also a visual screen as well. And the only other thing I thought was just about the process as we move forward, because that concern is legitimate that there would be some fatigue in the club, which doesn't seem as likely just knowing dog owners and how committed people are to their pets and what a resource this is. It seems likely that the involvement's going to be strong into infinity, but it's noted in the MOU that we will have a review, an update every 2 years, just to revisit and make sure nothing's getting away from us, that we're not letting this turn into a situation that's not addressing the problem, and that the pups maintain their commitment. And I thought, since this is about a year in, as Mr. Woods mentioned to me, we could request a memo 6 months from now, just to update us as to the next steps, make sure that the signage has gone up, and not a public hearing, but actually just making sure the council's kept apprised of the updates and the changes that have occurred. And then plan on looking at this again within the traditional 2-year period, as the MOU states, a year from now, and really, you know, making sure that there's not an issue that's cropping up that isn't being addressed. So those are my comments.
Thank you. I'm going to have to agree with all the comments made earlier by the my fellow council members. I know, Ms. Winholtz, when you talked about the sound testing, I've talked to some people who said that other areas with dog parks have done that in other communities in our county. And, you know, I'm sure each dog park might be a little different, but not much. And most of the documentation led that other community noises within our neighborhoods were actually greater than the noise from there. But, you know, it's always something you can look at. I agree that adding some additional signage in the parking lot certainly can't help. I mean, it can't help, can't hurt. It can help. And if some increased vegetation helps as a buffer, I think that's fine. And aesthetically, it's certainly nice. But I respect that the residents on Island Street are concerned about the dog noise. When you buy next to a park, just like anywhere, there are always going to be noises of sorts, whether it's children playing, barbecue areas. We have a skate rink there. We're putting in tennis courts there. It's going to be used a lot by a lot of things and a lot of entities. And I think that I had four dogs. We don't go there often. My dogs bark at home. I don't need them to go down there and bark. But I think that most of the people that are there using the dog park are following the guidelines. It's those that are just randomly letting their dogs run through the parks, which usually in my neighborhood and probably most everybody's is their neighbor's dogs that are off leash running free through there. And I think that's the bigger problem is the enforcing the leash law. And I'm fine with the warning and the fines like they are. I wouldn't want to have to pay $100 because my dog was barking excessively. I think that's going to get my attention. One of the residents I did speak to on Island Street that called, and I spoke with her for a while, and I believe she's a resident that lives within 150 feet. Some of her concerns were minimal, and it was that people were using the park before.
I don't care how many you have to put up. That would be good. I would like, if possible, to see monitoring during the busy times, weekends, in the morning, afternoons between 4 and 6, if that's a possibility, to have a docent there for a while just to regulate things and get people used to this. I don't think it would have to be forever, but maybe come back again after a month or two and just get people aware, keep spreading that word. Rather than trees, I'm thinking hedges would be better because trees aren't going to block a lot of sound. But I have an Escalonia that just grows like a weed. And something like that, I think, is thick enough that it would probably deaden the sound a little. It'll absorb it more than a fence will. A fence is just going to bounce it around more. Enforcement, whatever we can do, I think it's worth exploring. Explorers, could they do something maybe? But whatever we can to do some enforcement within the park itself, not the dog park, because I agree. I think a lot of the problem is coming from outside. I do want to say I so appreciate what all of you have done and what you're continuing to do. The people that I did talk to who are complaining are very aware of the fact that you're trying, and there's not so much animosity as there was before when we talked about this. They realize that it's something that we have to cooperate on, and they're willing to have that cooperation happen. So I think that we are on the right track. I don't think I want to change the MOU right now. I think I'd like to keep it voluntary. But to, you know, now that all the problems are out there and we're all aware of it, to try and work around that. So those are my suggestions. Staff, do you need any motion particularly, since we're not going to go into the MOU, or do you want to just go with those suggestions?
You submit her up.
Could I make a comment?
Sure.
While they're thinking, I don't know that we've come to a consensus up here about what we want to do. I think we've all mentioned some common threads, but we haven't all agreed on not going into the MOU. Now, I saw you say that, and I saw Ms. Borchard shake her head, so maybe there is a majority for that. But I think we need to say that out loud and not just assume it. Okay. And I'd like to see throw in my two bits that as we direct staff to in some way look at some kind of enforcement outside the park, that we also look to engage someone who is an expert to, rather than just throw up trees or hedges, that it needs to be done for a reason, not because we think it's good. I mean, I would also like to see that, but maybe that's not what's effective. And so I would like us to explore that. And if we can reach out maybe for free, or if we need to explore how much it would cost. But I think that that would be a valuable a service.
Okay. How do the rest of you feel about that? You want to explore that?
I'd be willing to look at something that wasn't going to be costly to evaluate the noise level if before we look at putting in hedges or trees.
Okay.
But I'm not interested in opening the MOU.
Okay.
What about... Yeah, that's fine. Well, what about locking the place up when it's not in use or after hours?
For me, I feel like that's going to create such a hardship on the volunteers to have to try and be there 7 days a week. It's kind of, to me, takes me back to the concerns Mr. Woods had at the skate park with trying to have somebody there. And what if it doesn't get locked? And, you know, I don't see the dog park as the problem as much as I see the outside areas as the problem of people. That's just my take on it.
Mm-hmm. A follow-up comment I had was in regards to the monitoring and enforcement there, and I guess it would be important to me that given that we do have limited resources even within our volunteer patrols, I see the safety issues with people getting to school at Del Mar Park and the bus system there, and then on Island Street of speeding, people getting to the park, those corridors, as being a higher priority for me personally than making sure that we have those volunteers patrolling in the park for someone with a dog off of a leash. I think that's a much better application for the community policing that the pups can supply. I would understand for a short term, but just I feel it's important for us to recognize that those concerns and the need for volunteer or police attention is much more in the trafficked areas where we have basically a rush hour two times every day during the school year, and I wouldn't want to see resources being pulled away from that to monitor the dog park for off leash situations. And I just wanted to make sure we said that, so there's some priority there that's recognized.
Well, I don't think any of us is looking at it full time. I think just, you know, if you do it for 1 week a month or 1 week every other month, it's only going to take a couple of citations for people to realize it's not worth the risk of not putting that leash on. So, yes, Chief Olivas?
Thank you. Just to follow up on some of those comments, I'd like to
find out about the cost of doing some sound testing. We want to see if we can have some sort of enforcement handled, either the administrative citations. Sounds like that would be the best. Did I miss anything? Oh, and we wanted to have, if the PUPS volunteers can do some monitoring on those busy times especially. Anything else?
And that would come back at an MOU at some point in the future when we have some information.
A memo. I will come back.
Memo.
With a memo.
Excuse me. Yeah, sorry about that. In a memo, letting us know what information there is regarding this sound testing and.
Does that sound
signage.
Like we've covered everything?
And you were planning on doing an emotion, correct?
All right.
It would be great to have a motion.
All right. I'll make all of that I just said a motion. Jamie, did you get any of that? Okay.
Second.
All right.
And could I add, I'd like to see some kind of definite time come back to it, just so the island people know that there's a deadline of some kind, that we have some feedback coming back, that certain steps have been taken or not taken.
Okay. How long would you anticipate?
I have no idea.
I would just comment that it will take us a little bit of time to get on the schedule with PD to get our staff, the selected few that we're going to put out there and the maintenance staff to be trained for administrative citations and the warning system that he has in place. So we'll have a lot more eyes and ears in the park at various times, including early morning as well as up to 4:30. But it's going to take a while to get them trained. It will take us a few weeks, if not a few more, to get some signs developed and made and installed. It's going to be probably a month before we get all that up and running, and then giving it a 2 or 3 month evaluation. Probably could come back in 5 to 6 months with a memo on the status of the things that you've incorporated in your motion.
Is that too long? Want something sooner?
No, I think that's good, because that'd be... Before you get 3 to 6 months, and if you can just update us as you're going through the process, maybe of where you're at on some of those things, that may be enough to just keep us current, and then we have it back in a year anyway.
What staff could do is we'll incorporate that into our status report that goes to the RPC every month, and if we get any kind of significant changes, we will be able to bring that to you in your Friday update or even our once a month here at City Council.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you all very much. I know this is a challenge, and I really appreciate everybody being cooperative. All right. Item B2, adopt a resolution declaring the existence of gulls at Bayshore Village exempt from Morro Bay Municipal Code, authorizing the Homeowners Association to remove the nests from their property.
Good evening again, Council.
On
September 25th of 2010, my office received a correspondence from the Bayshore Villages Homeowners Association requesting that the gulls located within their complex be declared a public nuisance and that an exemption be allowed for the removal of the gull nests from their roofs be granted by the City Council pursuant to Morro Bay Municipal Code 7.16. Basically, 7.16 states that no person shall trap, shoot, hunt, molest, or kill any wild birds or tamper, damage, or destroy the nest or eggs of any wild birds within the city. However, that section does allow the City Council to determine by resolution that the birds protected under this chapter have become so numerous or destructive in any particular location or area to constitute a menace and danger to the public health, safety, and property. In 2004, you received a similar request from the Bayshore Village Homeowners Association, and that was granted for a 3-year period. Attached to the staff report is a package that was delivered by the Bayshore with this request on September 25th, and that basically outlines the problems that they've had with the gulls on their property and the amount of money they've spent trying to eradicate the seagulls and the issues involved with that. Also included in the package is a federal fish and wildlife permit take, which allows them to take 50 western gulls, including their eggs and chicks, to protect human health and safety. So that it's a pretty straightforward item for you to discuss and open for a public comment. And then if you desire to pass a resolution, which would allow them to do that. I will say the last one was for 3 years. I've put in to this one 5 years. That's certainly something that you can determine whether you want to keep it at 3 again or increase it to 5. I put in 5 because I certainly, after we granted this, didn't receive any complaints, but that would be your desire, how long you want to continue it on for, or you could even do it for shorter than 3. So, and you might ask the applicants what their desire in that way might be.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, I just had one question. So in this case, it's entirely gulls that we're discussing?
Yes, just the western gull.
Okay.
All right. As a public.
They're just not conducive to keeping the birds away. I think at a regular home, people will take an effort to either hose them or get up on the roof, where we don't have that ability. They're two-story houses. We will have to hire a contractor to do this work for us. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. And then the other thing that I noticed in the permit is the permit calls out in item D that lethal take is not the primary means of control, which I appreciate. Have you seen some success with the besides the removal of nests and the physical addressing? Is there anything that seems to be jumping out at you?
Well, we've tried to use the little laser point light, laser lights you've seen that you point on chalkboards with. Those seem to deter the birds for a short period of time, but that does move them, and it doesn't hurt them at all. It just stirs their curiosity and gets them to move.
Have you told them about the Pismo Pier?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
This is just one of the many roofs that look like that. If you've been by between on Bayshore Drive off of Main Street, you can see the damage we've had, and it definitely presents a health hazard, and
sure.
We're trying to eliminate that problem.
Okay. Yes, Rick?
Just out of curiosity, have you ever had conversations with our Pacific Wildlife regarding how some of these might be saved instead of just getting the eggs and throwing them in the trash? And have you ever consulted with them about anything like that?
Not directly. We've had with the state, we've had the state come out, and I've talked with a special agent from the Federal Department of Fish and Wildlife, and then a local from the State Department of Fish and Game, and they've said that to answer your question, there's really no way. Our object certainly isn't to hurt the birds or harm them, just to move the colony to a more natural habitat that they'll live in. And that's a major problem right now for us. So we have two distinct colonies in the complex.
Okay. Thank you. This is a public hearing. Anyone else wish to speak?
My name is Jack Moorhead, and I am president at the present time of the Homeowners Association. And I also have to emphasize that I've been a member of Audubon for decades. This is not against the gulls. Our property is being damaged. We have a construction and maintenance specialist that gives us recommendations on how many times a year or how many years in between things should be maintained. And he strongly recommends that we do something serious to rid ourselves of the gulls. They're Guano is affecting our roads very severely. We have several residents who refuse to live in our complex during May, June, and July, during the breeding and nesting season, just because of the noise. Every morning, 4:30, quarter of five, it's really bad. And we are concerned about the health as well as our property values. So I just want to emphasize that we're really desperate. We've tried so many things. We've tried contractors, all the bird begones, all the different things. We've tried dozens if we've listed. And we feel that the removing of the nest is our best solution. And I would like to urge you for the longer period of time, at least 5 years, because removing one generation isn't going to solve our problem. It's going to take several years in a row to really try to impact and move the birds to another site. And both Bill and I will be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I do have one question.
Go ahead.
Is this action that you're taking, is this on the part of the board members or the whole Homeowners Association? Have you met as a group with everyone out there?
Yes, everyone's aware. Not everybody is in total agreement, and I do feel that there will be complaints probably to the police about harassment of birds, and oh my word, they're killing baby birds. But the consensus in the property is that we have to do something, and I do represent the board in that statement.
I myself am not far from your neighborhood and have heard complaints about people injuring birds even now without your permit to take.
Yes.
Intentionally, and that they don't appreciate that.
I have to say we have not injured any birds. We've tried the laser things. People have gone out and tried throwing a tennis ball on top of their roof. To my knowledge, we have not killed a single bird in that area in the past.
Eagle and not a more endangered or threatened species, that would make it a much more challenging situation. But because of the species and because of what I see as really cautious diligence on this and an attempt to avoid the lethal methods of dealing with the population, I'm comfortable with this. And 5 years, I think, would give them a chance to perhaps make the move that would help the colony relocate, hopefully completely, because I guess I don't want to see this just become something that's just ongoing throughout the long-term future. So I'm comfortable with allowing this tonight.
Carla? Well, I look at that picture and I feel your pain. I certainly echo the comments Mr. Smuckler made. The health and welfare of the residents, as much as I value and respect and care about the welfare of the gulls, I have to say that the health and welfare of the residents there certainly in this case is going to take a precedent. And the fact that they're working through the agencies, through Fish and Game and the city and everybody, I feel they're doing their due diligence and haven't just done this randomly where they've conferred with other agencies that are obviously supporting this measure. So I'm comfortable with that and with the 5 years.
Okay, Rick.
Well, I certainly understand your concerns. And I wouldn't make it binding, but I wish you would consult with Pacific Wildlife because they may have information that Fish and Game just issues the permit. They're not really there to help you with the problem. And I would just encourage you to get with them and see if there's anything, any ideas that they could give you because they have everybody's concerns at heart, yours and theirs. But, yeah, I would go with the 5 year.
I'm going to totally disagree, and for some background information reasons. When this first came to us, can't be more than 8 years ago because that's as long as I've been on here. What happened was they got permission to remove the nests, and what happened was the birds went to another neighborhood, and they caused the same trouble up on the cul-de-sacs coming off of Kern Street, and those people came back and told us about that. So I don't know that we're going after the right method in terms of how this is going to work. You know, you remove the problem from one area and you stick it in another area. I do have sympathy. I have to say I understand that you did not see the birds there in the 1990s. These were only built in the 1990s, and it could have been under the two sections of, you know, series of that these were built in three stages, that the construction kept the birds away. I can't not believe the birds weren't there beforehand because of the location to the bay, and that the seagulls, you'll find them all along the shore down below the bluff. Frequently over at the inn at Morro Bay. I'm wondering how they deal with this and if there's some suggestion, if you've talked with them about that. I would have a hard time saying to do this for 5 years. Their permit from U.S. Fish and Wildlife is for 1 year and that they then ask for a review. And so for us to extend that to 5 years, I think is extreme. Frankly, I think that we need to come back after a year and say, okay, what's going on? How has this been effective or not? I understand that the damage to the house, it's kind of like the dog park. You knew where you were moving in, next to the coast. There's seagulls there. You know, that's part of what you're buying into. Some of the information that they gave us was in terms of health issues, but that's strictly anecdotal. There isn't any real you know, series of, you know, this is what, how many people we have, and this is what kind of, and here's the doctor. I mean, there's none of that there. It's strictly a story. So that's real hard on me to want to kill birds, because that's what's going to happen because of anecdotal information. So I guess what I'm asking is, if this council is going to go this direction, and I can't imagine the heyday the Tribune's going to have on this in the front page of the newspaper, that we make this for 1 year, not for 5 years. And I'd like to see Mr. Grantham's suggestion that we try to work with some other organizations. I think the other thing that troubled me was that there was not consensus or information coming back, again, in written form from a California Fish and Game on how to deal with this. It was strictly a memo saying, I had contacted someone, this is what they said to me. Not that that's not true, but I'm wondering, where are they in this process? So that's my take on it.
Okay. They removed 14 nests on 72 units. They had 35 chicks in those nests. I think...
And they didn't even require a take permit or anything, because they weren't an endangered or threatened species. So this year, they did give them a take permit, which is, you know, sometimes not even necessary if they're not endangered or threatened. But I'm not sure. Is it a 1 year? It expires in 1 year. Yeah. So it is. It is a one.
Madam Mayor and Board and staff, that they only have a process that issues for 1 year. It is. We can go back every year and ask for it to be renewed, but they only issue 1 year permits.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's all they will do, period.
Thank you.
And in your resolution, it does say that you're granting this, but they still have to comply with any local, state, and federal regulations. Okay. So just because you're issuing the resolution doesn't mean they don't have to get any authorization from the other agencies every year.
Okay.
All right. I'll make a motion to approve item B2 with the timeline of 5 years. And outside the motion, I would encourage them to contact Pacific Wildlife Care for some possibility of relocation of those.
Okay. Chair, second?
Second.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1. Winholtz opposed. All right. Item B3. This is approval of parcel map and acceptance of abandonment of right-of-way and easements at 781 Market Avenue. Mr. Levick.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. As you said, this is requested approval for a parcel map at 781 Market Street and acceptance of the abandonments of the right-of-way. The parcel map is in order to finalize a lot line adjustment on the property, moving some lot lines. Normally that's approved administratively, but since this does include right-of-way abandonments and easement abandonments that the city's a party to, it requires council action. Abandonments can be processed using Section 8300 of the Streets and Highways Code, or Section 66499.20 and a half of the California Government Code, which is the Subdivision Map Act. That's the process that this map is going through, is the Subdivision Map Act process for abandonment. As I said, normally adjustment of a lot line adjustment of a parcel map is a ministerial act. It's approved under Government Code Section 66474.1, and as long as the map is found in compliance with the approved tentative map. This parcel map has met all the conditions and requires no other discretionary approvals. Therefore, we request you approve resolution number 52-10, approving this parcel map and authorizing the mayor to sign on behalf of the city as owner. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have no problem with lot line adjustments. I do have an issue with abandonment, and I'm wondering why we're doing that.
We're abandoning portions of the right-of-way to create... this is the Brannigan's parcel.
Right. And are we trying to expand that for them?
No. What we're trying to do is make the lot conform... We're making the lot larger, but it's so that it is a conforming lot, so it complies with the zoning code. Currently, the building comes to the property line. We're abandoning that portion so that it meets our existing zoning code.
But that's only on the Morrill Street side? What's up with the...
That's on the Market, the Morrill Bay Boulevard side.
Is it Pacific, the other street?
And the Pacific is the other street. That's to basically allow the property owner to build out that lot.
Other questions? Anyone? Nope. Okay. Discussion? A motion?
Move approval of B3.
This is a public hearing.
This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. We have such a huge public out there. Nope. Either of you wish to speak. Okay. We'll bring it back.
Yeah. Then I would like to some discussion.
Okay.
I don't know if you want your motion first or not.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Approval of B3.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
We have done several times abandoned property for developers, which I think is unfair to the city. It's valuable property, and we don't get an exchange for that. I understand why we are doing it along Market Street because of that message, though I'm...
But the building is not encroaching on that side.
Correct.
I guess I want to ask you about the non-conforming recording, because when I first moved to Morrill Bay 24 years ago, I lived in a non-conforming house, and it, you know, changed hands, and that didn't seem to be an issue. So I'm not sure that I'm buying the non-conforming argument either.
Having a non-conforming structure would allow it to exist where it is right now. If the property owner requested to do a substantial remodel for it, it would require a conditional use permit instead of a building permit, being a non-conforming structure.
And what's wrong with that?
It's an additional process that the property owner would have to go through, being that it's a non-conforming structure. If it was a conforming structure, then they would just apply for their building permit and comply with the building code regulations.
And yet other people do that. They go through that extra process when they have a non-conforming house. So I feel like we're giving a favor here, and I just want to put that out there.
Well, that's why I asked Mr. Schultz to respond, because my memory is that the elevator was part of the deal in exchange for that lot line.
As part of the lot line adjustment,
right.
Yes, as part of the elevator and also part of the original deal to do this lot line adjustment.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
So that was the public.
But again, on Pacific Street, there is a valid point that's been raised as to that reason on that side, because the building doesn't extend all the way over. All I can assume is when we were doing it, the person who drew the map did it on all three to make it a conforming, or not conforming, but just because he thought we were supposed to do it on all three sides. But, I mean, how far is that footage there?
It's 6 feet is being abandoned on the, 8 feet is being abandoned on the Pacific Street side.
8 feet by how long?
All the way down. Well, and that's the other curious thing. If you're abandoning it just that little corner, and yet below that, the city owns that property. So that's kind of a weird thing. So maybe at the least what we could do is not abandon the Pacific side and accept the other two abandonments.
Okay, how does council feel about that?
Well, my question would be to Mr. Schultz about what we've negotiated. I wouldn't want to put that in jeopardy. We've spent a lot of time on this, and we've all said that we'd like to see that proceed as quickly as possible. So
during the escrow, we've worked with we've been through about six or seven iterations of this, because there were seven underlying lots, and we've reduced that to three. We can certainly go back if they've agreed to this map and escrow is ready to close. If you want to change that and go back, we can go back to the Pacific and ask if that's acceptable to them. I don't know what their response would be.
It's an 8-foot strip. I'm not interested in concern to the point of stopping the escrow from closing at this point. It's been worked on for the last year now. I may just move forward.
Mr. Leivick, is there any project or anything else that you can think of that we would need that easement for on that part of Pacific that we would not, I mean, that we would have below it?
The street is built out to its ultimate design section. There's existing curb, gutter, and sidewalk.
And is this inside the curb, gutter, and sidewalk?
Or this is exclusive of the curb, gutter, and sidewalk.
Okay, so it's inside that.
Yes.
So we still have the curb, gutter, and sidewalk.
Correct.
Okay. That's what I need to know. All right. So we have a motion. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
4-1 with all opposed. Carla made the motion, Rick seconded. No, other way around. Rick made the motion, Carla seconded. Sorry. Okay. Future agenda items. Anyone?
I know that the PWEB had their meeting with the dial-a-ride people or the new call-in. Are we going to be getting a report back on that? Is that a memo? Will that be a public hearing? Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't seen it. Did we get it in our mailbox? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Anybody with future agenda?
I'm going to ask again, I guess just to verify with the city manager that the visitor center audit is going to be coming to us. And also, I'll wait till she answers that. Information.
Yes. Susan Slayton, our administrative services director, has finished that. We've met with the chamber, other visitor center, and I've got a memo that's almost done coming to you.
I guess I'd be interested in seeing, and I know they're going through a lot of changes, but I'd be interested in seeing if we could discuss the visitor center contract and possibly look at modifying it to include a seat for our city manager to represent the city.
Then the last permitted through our department was the first weekend in September.
So it's been a month that it's, I just am concerned that that's getting away from us again. Not getting it back.
Yes, we have some information that we've requested from the farmers market, and they were ready to bring that back. The chamber was when they received the resignation from Mr. Candela, and now they're we're struggling with to go to enforcement action or give them a little bit more time to respond.
They seem to be going through some upheaval.
Give us maybe some update on that. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else with a future agenda?
Yeah, I'd like to have a resolution and support from the Council of Prop 21, and I can bring the language back.
Okay.
That's the State Parks Initiative.
Do we have other people agreeing with that? Okay. We'll bring that back for next time.
Okay.
Anything else? All right, I have the closing quote. In this campaign season, I thought this was a good one. It's from Dag Hammarskjöld, the former UN Secretary General. A successful lie is doubly a lie. An error which has to be corrected is a heavier burden than the truth. With that, we're adjourned.